FNR, Football Nation Radio.
G'day football fans, you're listening to FNR Football Nation Radio. I'm David Davutovic and welcome to this week's episode of Football Q&A. Now, so many rich stories to tell in Australian football, but one of the reasons we love the game is because of its global appeal. And this week we speak to a guy who spent bugger all time in Australia, yet he's very well known to local audiences. And I speak, of course, of former England international and Chelsea and Manchester City star Sean Wright Phillips. Sean, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me over in Australia.
Absolute pleasure to have you here. Can you just explain to us what you're doing here at the moment?
Me, Jordan Stewart and Jolyon Lescott are part of an app called On The Ball. And we've come over basically to get it up and running and preparing for the launch soon to come.
Can you tell us a bit about it? I know you've been fairly busy over here doing some filming and whatnot behind the scenes, and I've seen a few of the clips and looks very, very exciting.
It's an app basically for kids and to a point older teenagers that may be a bit behind in football and drills and technique ability to be able to go off to a park or train with their parents and help them get better at the game.
So over 800 drills, so we understand that you've filmed for the app, and it'll be launched in 2018. So very exciting times for you guys.
Of course it's very exciting times. I think for us the main thing is we're being able to help kids that might not have the chance to be signed up to a pro club straight away, because as we know, as kids, you all learn at different levels, really, and different times of your life, and hopefully we can help them learn at the same time as, say, the quicker kids that pick stuff up. So I think it will do good on both fronts.
How did this idea come about? Because I understand you guys are also shareholders in this, so obviously imagine it's been a while in the making.
Michael, Maria, and obviously the background team and all the cameramen, Jimmy and his sister Cecilia, and of course Appstar has helped us along the way. But they've been planning in the works for like the last year, and finally it's got to the stage where we've had to all come over and do all the drills. And pretty much then it's been like non-stop. We wake up in the morning, we go for breakfast at 8 a.m. and by the time we get back to the apartment is pretty much dinner and bed, so it has been hard, but I think it will all be worth it.
So you haven't seen too much of Melbourne?
No, we haven't really seen any of it, to be honest with you. The most we've done it is gone out for food, and we've popped out to a few bars because obviously the jet lag has been a hard one for us to adjust to, and we haven't really had time for it even to kick in because we've been so busy. So it's been eventful and it's been fun, and I've made a lot of new friends.
Very good. And have they asked you to do any tricks outside of your usual bag, Sean, or is it sort of the standard repertoire that we've seen over the last 15 or so years?
It's a bit of both, but as you know, like you learn in stages. So I think that the first stage was to get all the simple stuff out, and that will help kids along the way. And as I think they progress and that the app progresses, then obviously we're going to stage two where things are a little bit more elaborate, and there'll be I'd like to think more people involved.
I guess it must take you back to your childhood and you know where you learnt your bag of tricks, because you know every player I guess has their influence you know in terms of parenting, coaching, etc. But I guess times have changed with technology, haven't they?
I think that's the main thing about it, is that we've moved forward in life, and like, and I think as a kid, and Jordan and Jolyon will tell you, if we had the chance to have this app when we was younger, maybe we could have possibly been better players at the time when we actually broke through. But to be able to give something back, like I said before, and give a bigger opportunity to younger kids, it's just amazing, really. Mm.
Tell us about your career at the moment. You're with Phoenix over in the US. How's life and how's football over there?
To be fair, we had a fantastic season. Obviously, it was hard to start with. It was new gel team and was just getting to flow of things. And obviously our manager Frank Yellup stepped down and for his own personal reasons, and it was hard to get pick up and get going again. But then we had a manager, Patrice came in, and with Rick and Corey, and they got us all together and we all gelled together as a team, and we went on an amazing run and managed to make it into the playoffs for the first time in obviously Phoenix Rising's history. So out of all of that, I'd say it came out positive. Mm-hmm. But obviously things change, and in football I think I've helped them as much possibly as I possibly can in terms of what they would like me to do and what they want to do. So I think just deciding now whether I'm going to keep playing or I'm going to hang up the boots and concentrate on something else.
You're still looking in fantastic nick. I mean, what are you weighing up? Obviously something like this app gives you a stepping stone into life after football, but I dare say you might have a year or two left in you.
For myself, yeah, I still love the game, and of course I would still like to play a year and a half or 2 years, but let's just see where it takes me. I'm off after this. I'm going to get back home, spend some time with the family and get to see my son play and hang out with my kids. So I think from then, after I have a conversation with all them, my mum, then I think I'll take the next step then, really.
So has the family come over with you to the US, or they've stayed in the UK?
No, my kids are with their mum, so I've just travelled basically. I'm always on my own, so it's just a matter of time and just deciding, really.
Mm-hmm. What about life after football? Is coaching something that interests you, Sean, or have you decided?
Yeah, I haven't decided. Of course, I'd like to coach younger kids, because, like I said, for me, it's an achievement to be able to help them and watch them go through their career. And obviously, fingers crossed, they make it to the big stages. And to say, like, I actually played, even if it was 0.5% of that helping them, that would just make me proud in its own right. But of course, I do produce music now as well. I've really enjoyed making house music, so when I get back to London, I've got all that to focus on. So there's a few things that I really enjoy doing, and I think they can work simultaneously. So it's just about getting the right balance, I think, for me.
I don't sense coaching is on the horizon for you.
Not at a big stage. I'd rather be able to, like, mentor kids, and because I've seen the highs, I've seen the lows, I've seen the bads, and I've seen the goods, and I feel like I could be a good mentor, but I think that's still like 3 or 4 years down the line, so I'm not really looking that far forward yet.
Mate, what are the words of wisdom that you would offer kids? And as we discussed, you've got the app and you know, fantastic, insight with drills and technique and that side of it. But I guess the mental side of it is a big one as well. So what are wisdom, you know, could you impart from your experiences?
From my experiences, I know mentally it can be challenging on a lot of fronts, because managers are not always what you expect them to be, but that's the job and it comes with the game. But as for me, I just always played a smile on my face. I always loved the game and I just never ever gave up. Like, even if things don't go your way, you can still help the team in other ways. So you fight and you put everything, your body on the line basically for your teammates.
Mm. And speaking of playing with a smile on your face, your brother Bradley is absolutely dominating over in the US at the moment. Really seems to have found a nice little niche for himself on and off the field, I suspect. So how are things going for him?
They're going fantastically well for him. I was there for a year and a half with him, which was amazing to sit there and see it close up, because obviously we've always played in different places and we've never really got to watch each other apart from if we turn on the highlights or the TV. So to be that close to him when I was there and watch him do his things, it was brilliant. And I'm just happy for him, because he of course did it the hard way, but he got his deserves, because he's always been capable of that, and New York gave him a fair crack at it and he showed them his value, really.
Yeah, absolutely starring with the New York Red Bulls at the moment. Are you guys pretty competitive? Does he sort of rib you a little bit now that, you know, he's got the edge on you after you perhaps had the edge on him over in the UK?
No, to be honest, we only really talk about football when we're together, as if, like, he missed a chance and I'd phone him and say, like, what were you thinking, or unlucky, or vice versa. And he said, what he would most probably say, why did you take it that way? And I'll explain it. He goes, yeah, I see what you're saying. But we have minimal talk. We're just like brothers, basically. They're just like, we don't play football when we're together. We have other things like Call of Duty and music. So we're always having a laugh and stuff.
Fantastic. And how much longer is he planning on staying for, or playing for, rather?
He's 3 years behind me, so I think while he's playing so well, he's fit.
Bit of gas in the tank.
Yeah, he's got a lot of gas in the tank. So my advice to him is keep going as long as you can, bro, because you never know. And when it's over, it's over. There's no real way back to it. So enjoy it and get the most out of it you can.
And for him, is he potentially looking at staying in the US post-football, or more likely to return to the UK with yourself?
I don't think he'll go back. I only go back to visit, like, so I most probably stay in America as well.
Okay.
But, his family's there, they're comfortable, his kids are in school, his youngest daughter was born in America, so the chances are it'll make things a bit more complicated if he decides to move back to England. So I think he'll live there, he's comfortable in New York.
Fantastic. You're listening to Football Q&A on FNR Football Nation Radio. We're speaking to former Premier League and England great Sean Wright Phillips. More after the break.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Football Q&A with Dave Davutovich from the Herald Sun on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Yes, welcome back to FNR Football Nation Radio. You're listening to Football Q&A with David Davutovich, and we've got a very special guest in former Premier League Chelsea and Manchester City champion Sean Wright Phillips, who's still kicking around in the US, contemplating whether he'll go on, and we certainly hope that he will, because he's still got plenty to offer. But Sean, you had an extraordinary career over in the UK, and I guess most people remember your 4 year stints with Manchester City and Chelsea. Talk to us about those days.
As a kid growing up, I couldn't really ask for no more or a better career. I kind of achieved the things that I always dreamt of, and that was putting on a shirt for my country and obviously playing for two massive clubs at the time, as in Manchester City and Chelsea. But it always just brought a smile to my face, and it just made me happy. It's quite hard to explain how you feel doing the thing you love 24/7. All your life, and then so it was brilliant, to be honest with you.
What would you regard as the highlight of your career, the most memorable moment?
There's not only one. I would say there's two for me. I'd say of course scoring my first goal for Man City, which had a bit of a weird feeling because it was at Millwall and our fans were banned. So we didn't actually have any supporters there, and we kind of just run over, and Darren Huckabee and Sean Gar, I remember, we're celebrating to basically no fans there. And that was a highlight. And of course scoring a goal on my debut against Ukraine for England. And so I couldn't really ask for no more at that time. Everything quite changed quite quickly for me in that period.
There's another pretty special goal that you scored. We'll just play a clip of that now, and then we'll get your views on it.
But here's Wright Phillips on the counter-attack from Manchester City. Oh! Well, that deserves to settle a quarter-final. They've both been superbly hit shots. First Tevez, now Wright Phillips, who scored in the 4-2 Premier League win against Arsenal in September. 2-0 to the experience of Manchester City.
Well, if the goal from Tevez was well placed, look at this one, just gets into this. And you look at it as a defender and you say, go on, if you're going to hit it from there, it's got to be some strike and it's got to be some placement to get it in. And it certainly is. It leaves Sean Wright Phillips' boot like a rocket and arrows into that top corner.
That goal, wow. Your memories?
It made it a little bit better because as when I was younger, I used to follow Arsenal. Before my dad got there, when my dad was playing there, so to score against them kind of showed that, or kind of made me feel like, wow, I am really there. But it was strange because the Arsenal always played like, well, not an inexperienced team, but a younger team than us. And for us, it's a chance for us, everybody, to win a trophy. No matter what team's out, you still have to go out and do your job. And of course, as Arsenal do, always have more possession. But we played on the break that day, and the chances we had, we managed to take.
A year later, you play in the you make the FA Cup final. Rather, I guess it was the first bit of silverware for Manchester City under the new ownership group, and you played a big part in that cup run. That must have been a special moment too.
It's hard to explain for me. It's always a special moment. I think every time I put the shirt on at Man City, Chelsea, and even QPR, it's just always been a special moment and always brought a smile to my face. Of course, if you don't play, it's not special, but you always want to play. And I just feel any player that doesn't always want to play, then obviously you're in the game for the wrong reasons. But for me, just putting a shirt on and being able to walk on the pitch in front of the fans that come and support you all the time and behind you, even sometimes when things ain't going your way, it's just the most proudest, I think, time that I could ever ask for in my career.
Your second stint at Manchester City, you signed, I think it was August 29, 2008. You returned to the club. It was a bit of a dream of yours, as you said. A few days later, City Football Group, the Abu Dhabi United Group, as they'll called at the time, bought Manchester City for around £300 million. Did you have any idea that was going on in the background?
No. If I had any idea, I most probably would wait in 24 hours. No, I didn't have no idea. And for me, going back to City had totally nothing to do with that. When I left, I always said if I had a chance to go back and put on a sky blue shirt again, I most definitely would. And the chance popped up with Mark Hughes, and I kind of didn't really waste any time as I wanted to play more games. So I just, as soon as I got the chance, I bounced.
What was it like being at Manchester City at that time, and how do you contrast it with your first stint there, obviously having come through as a youth team player and spent six years in the first team setup?
It was just weird because to the example of before the group came in, it was like Man City, the fans knew it was going to be exciting football. It was either going to win or lose, but it was always exciting, and the fans deserved the group in a way because no matter what the scoreline was, they came, they sold out. No matter what division we was in, they always sold out at Manchester City. And for them to get their rewards when the group come to the fact of where, what basically whoever they wanted, they could just go and get. But the players they were getting were actually performing as well. And of course, that now they're winning things, and now the fans are reaping all their rewards of just supporting the team for so many years, even when things were going bad. I remember the year that I first signed when I was 16, and they were in Division 2 at the time. They had just been relegated, and they still sold out then. So they've been there from the good times to the, you might as well say, the bottom. And now they're getting everything they deserve, and they're watching their team pick up trophies and possibly one of the best teams in the world right now as we speak.
What was it like playing at Main Road? What are your memories of that joint?
It's just the noise. It's just like you walk out and your hairs on your arms and stuff would stand up, and basically it was so noisy they wouldn't stop singing it. People say it's like the 12th man on the pitch, but when we played at Main Road at times, it was like we had 14 players just for the racket. Like, and that even if we was losing, they would still just keep singing and singing and singing and cheering and getting on our backs to keep pushing us. And I think as a player, sometimes when things ain't going your way or you miss a chance that you know you should have scored, with the fans behind your back, it just makes you want to get in that position again and do better. So it was fantastic.
You're listening to Football Q&A, and we're talking to former Premier League and England star Sean Wright-Phillips. Now, talking about your time at Manchester City early doors, you did play with a couple of Australian players there. What are your recollections of playing with those boys?
Well, they just, as you know, they just kind of slotted in, to be honest with you. But you don't really notice it. I just feel anybody that comes to England, whether they're Australian or from, like, say, Egypt or a country that where the league isn't so popular, the fact that they're there means they're capable of playing there, and they always did well. And they, in a way, when I was younger, they kind of helped me out. They kind of showed me the way because they had been there a bit longer.
Danny Tiato was the one who was there longest. He's a guy that he certainly polarised opinion as a player, sort of the guy that you'd love to play with, but probably not so much against. But how was he as a teammate? And he was obviously there during those tough years as well.
He was great as a teammate. He was always laughing and giggling and obviously working hard. And like you say, he had a great left foot as well, but he rid the highs and lows. And when I was coming through as a young lad, as I said, sometimes he helped me through it, because that's what senior players at the time that were there for. They help and they teach, and pretty much what I done all last year with Jordan Stewart and Peter Ramage at Phoenix as younger players coming through, we're trying to help them and make them become better players.
You weren't on the end of any of his tackles at training, were you?
Luckily not. I learned very quickly how to avoid or ride tackle, should I say, because everybody was always a lot bigger than me, so I had to learn how to deal with things different ways.
Yeah, he's what you say, or what you call, a healthy dose of white line fever.
That's a good saying. I've never heard that one before.
A couple of other boys are shorter stints and you know, lower profile, I guess, in some sense, but Simon Colosimo and Daniel Allsop, the striker, any recollections of your time with them?
More so Danny, because obviously he was up front, but at the time I signed, there was like, well, at the time I was actually coming through, there was a lot going on. Of course, you had like Sean Goher and Paul Dickoffs, and the times where the system was changing, it wasn't so much just 4-4-2, and like, I feel like players just had to learn to adapt, and it was a bit easier for, like, say, your midfielders and your wingers to adapt, because you just learn how to play midfield as well as a winger as you're growing up. But he scored important goals for Man City at the time, and at a different time and possibly a different manager, he most probably would have been there a lot longer. But I always say in football, sometimes you need a bit of luck and timing, and that could be key.
You went to Chelsea in 2005, an extraordinary time to join that club. It was a high-profile transfer. What was it like for you? I guess you were still fairly young. Bit of a whirlwind for you?
It was quite emotional, because at the time, obviously, I didn't want to go. A lot of people didn't know that. It wasn't because I didn't want to sign for Chelsea, because obviously it's a dream, but I was so emotionally attached to Man City that it wasn't something that I wanted to happen just yet. But obviously, if I didn't, I heard that City could have gone into administration. So the fact that I went actually helped City. So it benefited my career and it helped City stay afloat. So it worked out for the both of us. And plus, I got to get back there again.
And the City fans have always appreciated that, haven't they?
Yeah, they've always shown their appreciation. Even when I've been in Phoenix, I still get brilliant and amazing messages from them. So whenever I get the chance, I always try to go to their games and stuff like that. So to give a little bit back and through the support they've shown me over the last 18, 19 years of my career.
Notwithstanding that, I guess your stint at Chelsea was fairly memorable, and, you know, playing under Jose Mourinho and playing with the likes of Lampard and Terry and Drogba and all those sorts of players. I mean, extraordinary time to be at Stamford Bridge.
It was quite overwhelming when I obviously first went there, and I really became close quite early with Wayne Bridge and Colton Cole before he left, and then after that, John Terry and Didier kind of just took me under my wing. And then, of course, you had your Michael Essiens and your Claude Makélélés, and the list just got bigger and bigger of who, like, and being involved in the England squad just made it easier for me to gel with people.
Jose Mourinho, what's he like to play under? What was he like for you?
I thought he was amazing for me. To be honest, even I can't put, like, I never had any conflicts or any arguments or anything with him. I got on really, really well. Of course, sometimes I got taken off for maybe not playing well, or tactically it wasn't going the way we wanted to go, but that's just football, and that's just things that just happen. You can't really prepare for them, and that's just something you deal with when and after it happens. But like I said, I'm a person that just puts his head down and just works even harder.
So you go back to Man City, as you said, it was chaos. City Football Group, or Abu Dhabi United Group, as they were known at the time, by the club. Within a couple of days, Robinho turns up to the club. He thought he was going to Chelsea, I think the reports were at the time. I mean, what a crazy time to be there. Paint a picture for us.
How do you paint a picture of that? It would be a messy picture, I suppose. And yeah, it just... Well, I obviously signed, and obviously that happened after, and then we was told roughly who was coming in and stuff like that, and I was like, wow, this is all happening pretty quickly, so I guess we're making a run for things, and I took it, and basically that quite happened. I think the year that Mark Hughes got the sack, we was unbeaten, and he drawed 4 games in a row, and we were sitting like 5th or 4th in the table at the time. So we was like, well, that's strange. So
the bar's been raised.
Yeah, so I was like, well, that's a bit weird sort of thing. But like I said, mysterious things happen in football, and for some reasons there isn't actually a reason for it. That's just the way it goes.
Did you have much exposure to the new owners?
I think our first pre-season tour, we went there just to do some things and train. We was in Abu Dhabi, so we got to meet a few of them, and they told and explained what they wanted and how they wanted things to go. But it's football. Nobody really likes to lose, and everybody wants to win everything anyway. So that was kind of our attention when we knew what they was building as. We can actually do really well here because we had some great players. We had Adebayor, and everybody knows what he was capable of. We had Alana, we had loads of players, and the defence was strong at the time. Obviously, Vincent company, you had Mika on form, and you had Joe Hart, one of the best keepers at the time in England. So everything was where it was meant to be, but with football, it doesn't always go according to plan.
I mean, the Premier League regards the City Football Group as perhaps the best owners in the Premier League, when you look at, you know, what they've brought to the table, the amount of money they've invested, etc. And I guess not as much controversy, so to speak, as compared to some of the other owners. But do you feel that they have really helped raise the bar in the Premier League and take it to another level?
Yeah, they definitely have. But it's like, who can compete with them?
Mm.
That's the problem you got. Like, you need somebody to compete with him, but the only way that happens is you've got a manager like, say, Mourinho, that will just always do well with his teams, and then it will just be down to the individual team. But as for financially and what they can offer people, there's not many people that can compete with them in the Premier League. So to that point, now it's just, for me, the managers. Like, you see the managers are doing really, really well. You have Chelsea manager Conte, and then you have, I was going to say Arsene, but he's having a bit of a bad time. So I'll leave that one. You know what I mean? Like, so it's down now just solely to the manager. It's who's the best manager. Besides who's got the most money, that doesn't mean anything on the pitch. If you can get your players to play well, then no matter how much money you pump in, ain't going to win you the title.
That's right. Money doesn't buy success, does it?
No, it definitely does.
There's only, you can count on one hand how much silverware Manchester City has won since the new owners have come in. But under Pep Guardiola, they really seem to have got it right, and they really seem to be humming this season, don't they?
He's got them playing, I think, I could say, as close to Barcelona when everybody was literally scared of him. And it seems like he's got Man City doing the exact same thing, and I just feel like people think they can just sit off against them, but then if you sit up against them, they just find a way to pass through you. So it's, do you go or do you just keep the scoreline down? So I think that's where he's got everybody at the minute. So every team that starts against him is already on the back foot.
And I'd imagine when you see this team and the way they're playing, and for you, you look at someone like Raheem Sterling, and there must be a little bit of envy, almost wishing you were 10 or 12 years younger and being part of the team. And seeing some amazing clips of Pep being really hands-on with Raheem on the training ground and teaching him body movement and positioning and that sort of stuff.
I wouldn't say... I envy, of course, anybody as a winger or a striker would love to play under a manager like Pep and have the way they play, because it's goals and it's entertaining football. But for, I'm a City fan now, so for me, I'm watching it like cheering. So I take it the other side now. So now I'll go to a bar and have a beer and watch them on TV instead of wanting to play. Like, now I know I've had my time and it was successful there, and now it's time for somebody else.
We've got the City owners over here, as well as New York City, of course, where you've had exposure to them, and you were actually a rival playing for New York Red Bulls. But they bought Melbourne Heart, now Melbourne City, 3 or 4 years ago, and they've invested substantial funds over here in Australia. Have you sort of got any views on how things have gone over here? Have you followed it from afar?
No, I don't really. I haven't really heard too much. I know, but that's because of a friend Tim Cahill plays, so I know a bit and I try to keep up with it. But with the time differences, sometimes it just proves impossible.
It is tough.
I lose track of days and everything speaking to the family, so the other way would be too hard for me. But from what I've heard here, they're doing all right. I watched some of the game the other day. I saw McCormack's free kick, which was a great free kick. But Peter about the sending off, though, that was a bad set. It was a bad tackle, but it's football. But, it takes time for things. Even if you invest a lot of money to get a team where you really want it, it takes time.
What about in the US with New York City? We've seen them make some amazing signings, David Villa, Andrea Pirlo, Frank Lampard, etc. And the crowds are pretty solid too.
That was the same when they first came in. They was playing nice football, but they was conceding goals. And slowly but surely over the last 2 or 3 years, you can see they've improved, and Pat's got them playing the way he wants them to play. And that's the same thing I think is going to be with the City group over here as well. I think things just take time. You can't just say, here, here's 11 players and here's a new manager and it's just going to fall into place. So it always takes time to have a team playing the way you want them to play.
What's been the toughest time for you in your career, Sean?
I'd say that the last year or two at QPR, Harry didn't make it the best of times for me. He made that like pretty much I was there for the money, which isn't really in my nature anyway, and started putting things out in the papers and etc. Made that like I never trained, and I pretty much train every day, even if I can't walk or I can't. You have to literally tell me not to train. I just love the game too much to do any of the things he said, but I'm not one of those people that will come out and have a public argument about it. If that's his views, that's his views. I just keep my head down and work hard. And as soon as I got the chance to get away, I did, and I signed for New York Red Bulls.
So in saying that, I mean, the move to the US, was that something that was ideal timing, just to get away from the English football bubble, I guess, as a lot of people view it?
I think it was perfect timing, but of course it wasn't planned or didn't know anything about it. I was just literally training there just to keep fit while I was at my brother's wedding, and one thing led to another, and I just ended up signing.
Fantastic. You're listening to Football Q&A on FNR Football Nation Radio. We're speaking with Sean Wright-Phillips. More after the break.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Football Q&A with Dave Davutovich from the Herald Sun on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Yes, welcome back to Football Q&A on FNR Football Nation Radio. You're with David Davutovich and a very special guest in Sean Wright-Phillips, former Premier League and England star. Now, Sean, you've got some pretty decent bloodlines, don't you? You grew up obviously watching your father, and now there's a younger version running around doing some not bad things too.
Yeah, I don't want to give him a big head, but he's doing all right at the moment. Yeah, my son DiMaggio Wright-Phillips, he's making his uncle, his dad and his granddad very proud at the minute, and we couldn't ask for nothing more or less from him.
Take us back to your childhood and I guess your first memories of football in life. I'd imagine football would have been a big part of it.
It was kind of weird because at my age, not many things were done. There wasn't like a local football Sunday team which was around my age group. I had to wait until I was like 13. And then, so basically it was just playing with friends on the street and older guys and older kids. And then the Sunday League appeared. Obviously, it's normally like a dad that has spare time and the mums and that would get all the cars together and like tarot each other all the way to the next facility. And then we kind of joined forces with a group called 10MB, which then filtered all age groups. So, pretty much a lot of people in South London, we used to have to pay £2 subs and stuff and train like once a week on some rubber stuff with a track around it. But it was all good. And then I got scouted for Millwall, and at the time I didn't really want to go, and my mum said, if you don't go, you're not going to make it. And I was like, mum, if I'm meant to make it, I'll make it, but Millwall isn't a place for me. So I didn't go there. And then I got scouted to Nottingham Forest, and I was on like School of Excellence forms, which was like 2 years. You go up on holidays or work experience. And when it was time to sign the actual YTS contracts, they were called back then, they said yes. And then when I got home, I was told my mum got a call off Steve Wrigley and Paul Hart. I think they're the coaches. And they said he's not good enough and he's too small. So I was like, oh well, I was a bit upset at the time, but like I said, I'm not really that sort of person. So it just made me hungrier, to be honest. And 2 days later, the same scout that brought me to Nottingham Forest said, look, Man City want you to come up. Can you just turn around, basically get there, get some stuff and come back up like 2 days later? So I said, yeah, why not? So I went on and we had to play a friendly. And if I remember correctly, I think it was against Port Vale. It was a friendly team at Platt Lane in Fallowfield. And I played pretty decent there, and they pretty much just signed me straight away. And from there, things happened quite quickly. It just went from being a YTS to signing pro and then training with the first team and then playing in a testimonial at Old Trafford when Barthez was the goalkeeper. So things happened pretty quickly after, and then one thing just led to another.
You're born in 81, so your first memories of watching your father, Ian Wright, would they have been at Crystal Palace or Arsenal?
It was at Crystal Palace, and the game I remember is at the old Wembley, Crystal Palace versus Man United in the Cup, and obviously they were 2-0, I think it was 3-1, and my dad, I think he was sub, and he came on and scored 2 goals, and that obviously took it into a replay. But because he was injured before that, so he didn't know whether he was going to make. And obviously, he managed to be fit enough to get in the game and score his 2 goals. But that was like my first memory. But before that, I used to watch on TV and think it was all acting. I didn't know like it was like that serious until like then, really.
You must have been absolutely buzzing being in the stands as a toddler watching your old man do that in front of what 85,000 people.
Yeah, it was just nice to actually see it up live and personal, and rather than watching TV and Match of the Day or watching it on Sunday. But it's all good stuff, and I think that gave me a little kick up the bum to want to be a part of something like that.
Yeah, so that really inspired you. I imagine next morning you would have been out kicking the ball on the streets of East or North London.
South London. Yeah, it was, I don't know, we did it anyway. Like, if my mum sent us to the shop or we had to go to the shop with her, me and my brother, we just took the football with us. There's not even anywhere to kick it, we'll just kick it down the path and stuff like that. So we just grew up with a ball, basically, from like the time we could walk, pretty much. We used to play in there, we used to break stuff, mum used to go mad, so then we used to go on a balcony, and then one thing just led to another, and then everybody, like, that was part of growing up for us, was playing football on concrete or any piece of grass you could see.
Which is what a lot of kids miss these days, isn't it?
Yeah, you can kind of say, as in football terms, they've kind of grown up with the silver spoon treatment. Because we had to find something to pick poo up off the floor. We never had, like, no goalposts, so we'd use a bike or a jumper. Whereas now, you go to a park, they've got crispy, nice grass, no dogs allowed on it, they got goals, everything already, but obviously that's just the way football goes sometimes.
So I guess, I mean, your dad Ian would have, you know, got a substantial wage through football and whatnot, but was that just part of his, I guess, the way he brought you up and, you know, teaching you a form of discipline, I guess, or...?
Well, I do it with my kids, and yeah. my mum played a key role in all of that. Our mum, she worked two jobs to make sure everything went perfect for us, but we never wanted much. We just, all we cared about at that time was trainers to play football in. And that was basically how me and my brother grew up. We never asked for anything, and I think that helped us fight and work to achieve and get what we want for ourselves and for our family.
You mentioned earlier you're an Arsenal fan. Now
I'm a Man City fan.
Earlier you were an Arsenal fan.
I followed them when I was younger.
All right, I stand corrected. But obviously you'd have Crystal Palace were the first memories, but you would have, I guess, special memories and arguably most of your childhood memories from those days at Highbury when your dad was, you know, bagging away goals for fun.
It was. Sometimes it was pretty hard to get to the games for us because we always had games as well on Sunday. And if we went to the games, then normally we'd be staying with our dad. So then that means we wouldn't get the game on Sunday. So we always chose TV over the game just so we could play on Sunday. So the ones we did get to, it was lovely to see. And the older we got, I suppose it was easier for us to go because then we'll just get on the train on our own and just go down there. But
the tube.
Yeah, but even just watching it on TV for me and my brother was just... like amazing. That's one thing we made sure we was always at home for as we got older, was match of the day and watching it on TV and getting to see everything.
Your dad was still playing when you debuted for Man City in 1999. He was in the twilight of his career, Celtic and Burnley. Did you ever line up against him?
No, we was close. we did, to be fair. We always spoke about that, and obviously there was my uncle Mitchell Thomas as well at Burnley there at the same time, and I was dying especially to play against him because he used to give me all the math. I'll just kick you. I was like, yeah, all right, let's see if you can catch me sort of thing. But every time we lined up to play them, they were both injured, surprisingly. And then, of course, our dad went to Celtic, so but that never happened. But it would have been nice. We lined up in a testimonial game together, but that was about it.
We're speaking with Sean Wright-Phillips on Football Q&A on FNR Football Nation Radio. Now, speaking of passing on the baton, your son, DiMaggio Wright-Phillips, he's going all right, isn't he?
He's going really well at the minute. He gets a bit nervous sometimes, but I just tell him, listen, just do what you do that got you to where you are in the first place right now. But he's very talented and he's learning. And that's the main thing. He stays behind after training, practices on his shooting. He listens to the coaches and tries to take on board everything that they tell him, as well as taking on board what I try to tell him. But I try not to cloud his mind too much, because obviously if you've got a coach, he wants you to play a certain way. So unless he answers me a question on that certain way, I try not to tell him too much to confuse him, apart from just be yourself.
And he also broke a record for schoolboy track cycling, which is quite extraordinary. Tell us about that.
He went through a stage where he was just doing every sport at school. And this was one of them that he wanted to do involved. Now, I was a bit worried because, obviously, if it's a bad accident, it could have prevented his football career. But, obviously, a young kid, you can't really tell him, no, don't do that, because he might have wanted to take it... do it professionally or full time. So he did it, and he broke the record, and I was like, wow. Have you ever ridden a bike before? And he was like, no, that was my first time. I said, lucky for some, isn't it? And he just never went back after that.
Amazing. James, did you ever ride a bike?
Only for messing around, nothing like serious like that. I think I was a bit too lazy for that.
But he's parked that now, and he's fully focused on his football.
He's fully focused on his dreams at Man City.
And that's been justified. Earlier this year, he got the call up for the England under-16 squad. How was that experience for him?
And he loved it. I was FaceTiming him a lot while he was away and stuff with his friends. And he actually loved it. And it's good because now they go to different countries, so they're already learning how to play different styles of football and learning how to deal with different cultures. And I think that's amazing for the kid, because it's not only helping them on the pitch, it's maturing them as a person off the pitch and understanding what else is out there in life.
You're listening to Football Q&A on FNR Football Nation Radio. We're speaking with Sean Wright-Phillips. More after the break.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Football Q&A with Dave Davutovich from the Herald Sun on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Yes, welcome back to Football Q&A on FNR Football Nation Radio. You're with David Davutovich and a very special guest in Sean Wright-Phillips, former Premier League and England star. There's extraordinary pressures attached to kids whose fathers were professional footballers. Now, your son's obviously going through that now. You went through it, I imagine, when you were growing up. Did you feel a pressure, an expectation?
For me, of course, there's a little pressure there, but I've just always said I'm not going to play anything like my dad. So I wouldn't say I'm not going to follow his footsteps, but I'd rather make my own footsteps. I want to be me as a person, and that's what I try to create, and that's what I try to tell my son. Don't worry about what people say to me. You're a different player to how I was. I was more direct. You might be more skillful. So it doesn't matter. Just focus on doing you and creating a name for yourself rather than living under a name.
But there is a lot of, I guess, media hype and attention on these things. I mean, I think of someone like Kasper Schmeichel, who is an extraordinary keeper, but, you know, forever will be compared to his father, who was, you know, arguably the greatest keeper of all time. Do you just try and block it out, or...?
And you just deal with it. Yeah. It's just part of football. Like, it's more people outside of the game that ain't in the game that see it like that. As a player in it, you just get on with it. You know, his dad was a great keeper, but now it's his time. And you never know, he could end up being better than his dad. Like, things work out, like, different and timings and everything, but he's won a title just like his dad has, so it's just he's moved forward, really, and get on with it.
I'd imagine DiMaggio's dream would be to play for the senior England side one day. Have you spoken to him about that?
No, we don't. Our family's quite strange like that. We don't really think that far down the line. We kind of just work with what's happening now and what you can do over the next few months, and if he keeps progressing, I don't see why not.
Now, I know comparisons obviously with you and your father. Your dad, Ian, 33 caps, 9 goals for England. Sean Wright-Phillips, 36 caps, 6 goals. You have bragging rights forever and a day over your father. Have you reminded him of that? How often do you speak to him about it?
No, I don't. When it first happened, we spoke and had a laugh about it, but now I've got a son in the same position, so I've kind of quietened down, because I know this is going to happen to me soon, hopefully. So, no, it's just putting on a shirt for England is an achievement in itself, and to have, obviously, my dad and me, and obviously my son being a possible chance to take after our footsteps is something that you couldn't really ask for.
He's part of a fantastic setup. I mean, I've been to Manchester City's academy, 16 pitches, artificial grounds, the indoor field where they can tailor the temperature according to where they're playing and all that. And I dare say a fair bit of romance attached to it with your links to Manchester City. It's really, a beautiful time and an exciting time for him and the family.
It is exciting, but like I said to you, it doesn't mean anything yet. For me, he's learning from possibly the best coaches around, but until he continues to show it on the pitch, then it's like empty potential. People can say you can have all this potential, but until they see it on the pitch, then it doesn't really mean anything. So I just tell him to keep working hard, and when that day comes that you get a chance to possibly put on a first-team shirt, just try to grab it with both arms and don't let go.
And I've got to get your views, A, on English football, and then I'll get your views on or your predictions for the season. But first on English football, just where are things at right now and where's it headed? Some fantastic youth results at the moment.
It's great to see the under-23s and under-21s and so on doing so well. But I just feel like the bridge is, you still need to be playing regular first team football. And I just feel like that's what sometimes we're lacking in English football and for the English national team. I just feel like most of the teams they play against, them players are playing regular first team football in the Champions League. Whereas I feel in England, it's mainly, obviously it's nice to have for the Premier League, but for the young and up and coming players, when do they get a chance to play? If they just buy the best players in the world to play for the top teams, how are these young English players going to play at that level on a regular basis?
And that's why it's fantastic seeing someone like Harry Kane doing what he's doing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's such a big thing for English football, because he's come through the ranks. He's been on loan, he's come back, he got his chance in the first team, and he's grabbed it with two arms. And whatever level they play, mate, he's getting goals, and that's what you need from your striker.
Will England win a World Cup in your lifetime?
Bloody hope so. If I'm honest, I hope so.
You're not that old, are you?
No, I hope so. I really do hope so, because I would really love to see that. Because we've gone, it's been hard, because obviously we always have good squad players and we always have good players, and if people put names down on paper, they say, well, England should win here. But it's never as simple as that. And we all know that. But it would be lovely to see and witness.
And no prizes for guessing who your tip is for this year's Premier League title, this season's Premier League title.
I don't think it's no surprise for anyone at the moment, because I can't see anybody beating them, to be honest with you. I watch them all the time, especially me and Jordan, as soon as we get a chance, because he's a big Chelsea fan, and like obviously I'm a big City fan, so we're always back and forth, and even he's saying I can't see anybody beating them.
They're just amazing.
Yeah,
aren't they?
At the minute they have everything. They defend well, they keep the ball well, and every chance they get, they seem to score. And if you've got players like De Bruyne and Silva, and then you've got Aguero and Jesus up front, what can you do? And Sterling is playing his heart out, and he's getting in all the goal scoring positions, and he's scoring goals. So you've got five of the best attacking players all scoring goals all at the same time.
Sean, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
That was Sean Wright-Phillips. You've been listening to Football Q&A on FNR Football Nation Radio. We'll be back again next week. After the break, the High Performance Show with Chris Appleford.
Football Q&A with Dave Davutovich from the Herald Sun on FNR Football Nation Radio.